lab where the bright screens glow. We fold a tiny guardian from life.
Welcome to Base by Base, the paper cast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. So, picture this for a second. A child in Haiti develops a sudden, severe fever.
Right.
And the clinical team steps in, they test for the usual suspects, dengue, malaria, you know, the common endemic pathogens, nothing. The results just come back totally negative.
Which is always a terrifying moment for a clinician.
Exactly. What they don't realize right away is that the culprit is a virus that up until very recently only existed in birds and pigs. And we have zero approved vaccines for it, zero therapeutics.
Yeah.
Our medical cabinet is basically empty.
Completely bare. Yeah.
So here's the situation for you listening right now.
Mm-hmm.
We have a virus from an entirely different animal family actively figuring out how to adapt to human biology. What really happens when a pathogen like this starts knocking on our cellular doors and we have absolutely nothing on hand to stop it?
It is a massive problem.
Right. And more importantly, how could we completely rewrite our global strategy from reacting to pandemics as they unfold to computationally designing and stockpiling custom-built, perfectly tailored biological defenses before the wider outbreak even begins?
I mean, that transition moving from reactive medicine to proactive computationally designed barriers is arguably the most critical shift happening in modern biotechnology right now. We're moving from hoping we find a natural defense to actually engineering an artificial one from the ground up.
Yeah, and that brings us to the core of our deep dive today. Today we celebrate the work of Nathan G. Avery, David Viesler, and their collaborative teams at the University of Washington, the University of Utah School of Medicine, and Vera Biotechnology, who have advanced our understanding of pandemic preparedness through the computational design of antiviral mini-proteins.
Right, and we are drawing these insights from an incredibly detailed study. It was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, or PNAS, on April 29th, 2026. This research really maps out a blueprint for handling emerging zoonotic threats before they escalate into global crises.
So let's set the stage here a bit. Most of us hear the word coronavirus, and our minds immediately jump to the beta coronaviruses, you know, SARS, MERS, COVID-19.
Yeah, yeah.
They have completely dominated the global conversation and, well, our funding priorities for the last few years. But this research targets a different branch of the family tree entirely.
Yeah, so the coronaviridae family actually has five genera. This deep dive focuses on the Delta coronavirus genus, or DCOVs. Birds are the natural evolutionary reservoir for DCOVs. They have circulated in avian populations for a very long time.
Okay, so it starts in birds.
Right. But the specific pathogen we are dissecting today is porcine Delta coronavirus, or PDCOV. It first jumped onto the radar when it was discovered in pigs in Hong Kong back in 2012.
And it didn't just quietly circulate, right? I mean, it caused massive, devastating outbreaks in agricultural pig populations globally.
It did. And the real problem is the mechanism it uses to break into cells. PDCOV hijacks a specific cellular receptor called aminopeptidase N, or APN.
APN, got it.
Yeah, the viral spike protein seeks out that APN receptor and uses it as the physical anchor to pull itself into the host cell. And recently, we have seen multiple documented zoonotic transmissions.
Meaning actual spillovers.
Exactly, spillovers of PDCOV into humans in Haiti. So the virus is actively mutating its spike protein to better interface with the human version of that APN receptor.
Wow. Which really brings us to the core mission of this research for you listening today. The world desperately needs broad-spectrum entry inhibitors. We need a way to jam that interaction completely. So are we basically trying to forge a universal biological keyhole blocker before we even know exactly which door the virus is going to try to unlock next?
That is exactly what they are doing. Instead of relying on traditional antibodies, the researchers here utilized de novo computational protein design. They basically decided to build a completely synthetic defense from scratch.
So not just finding something in nature, but building it.
Right. Because traditional drug discovery often relies on screening millions of existing natural compounds and just, you know, hoping one of them happens to interfere with the virus, de novo design completely flips the script.
Oh.
The researchers used an advanced computational tool called Bindcraft. They used it to mathematically calculate the optimal shape of a protein that would bind to the receptor binding loops of the PDCOV spike protein.
So they are essentially looking at the three-dimensional topography of the viral spike. You know, the ridges, the valleys, the precise atomic structure.
Yeah.
And they're using generative AI to hallucinate a novel protein that perfectly cups that specific shape.
Perfectly, yes. They are designing what they call mini binders.
Mini binders.
Right. These are ultra compact synthetic proteins. They range from just 54 to 190 amino acids in length.
Oh, wow. That is small.
It is. For context, a standard human antibody is a massive complex molecule made of over 1,000 amino acids. These mini binders are tiny, stripped down homing missiles.
That is wild. So the software generated 101 different digital blueprints that passed the initial thermodynamic scoring. But having a digital blueprint is only step one.
Oh, absolutely.
I have to ask, it's one thing to design a protein on a computer, but how often does a software prediction like AlphaFold 3 actually translate perfectly to a physical working protein in the real world?
Well, that is the million-dollar question, isn't it? So to test that, they deployed AlphaFold 3. AlphaFold 3 is a deep learning model that predicts how a linear string of amino acids will fold into a three-dimensional structure based on the fundamental laws of physics and chemistry.
Right.
The researchers fed their 101 hallucinated sequences into AlphaFold 3 to predict not just their individual shapes, but exactly how they would physically dock with the viral spike protein.
Like a digital simulation of the docking process.
Exactly. And based on those structural predictions, they narrowed the field down from 101 to just 16 of the most promising candidates.
All right. So AlphaFold 3 says this digital blueprint works. But you can't just hit print on a 3D printer for a protein. You need to hijack a biological factory, right? Like using yeast or bacteria to actually grow it.
Yeah. So you introduce the genetic instructions for these 16 mini binders into E. coli bacteria. The bacteria read the synthetic DNA and manufacture the proteins for you.
Just brewing them?
Essentially, yes. And once the researchers harvested these physical mini proteins, they faced their first major experimental hurdle. They had to prove the proteins actually stick to the viral spike in reality, not just in a computer simulation.
Right, which they tested using biolayer interferometry. Or BLI for short.
Yes.
And the way this works is really cool. They attach the synthetic mini binder to the end of a microscopic glass tip, right? And they submerge that tip into a solution filled with the viral spike protein and then pass a light beam through the tip.
It is highly precise.
Yeah, because as the viral proteins stick to the mini binder, it actually changes the thickness of the biological layer on the tip, which alters how the light reflects back. It gives you a real-time, highly precise measurement of binding affinity.
It proves the physical attraction is there, but, you know, sticking to a glass tip in a controlled buffer solution is light years away from stopping a dynamic live virus from infecting a complex living cell.
Oh, for sure.
So the researchers had to prove functional neutralization.
But without accidentally causing a lab leak of a dangerous pathogen, I assume.
Right, safety first. To test live infection safely, they engineered a surrogate. They took vesicular stomatitis virus, or VSV. It is a relatively harmless virus, often used in labs. And they genetically modified it so that its outer shell displayed the dangerous PDCoV spike protein.
Oh, wow. So they gave a harmless virus the exact biochemical exterior of the pathogen they wanted to stop.
Exactly. So if the mini binders can neutralize this surrogate from entering human cells in a petri dish, it practically proves they can block the real deal.
So they ran the gauntlet. Out of those initial 101 digital dreams, one absolute champion emerged in the physical tests. A synthetic mini protein they named MB11.
MB11.
Let's look at the actual performance data for MB11, because this is where the computational predictions meet biological reality. The researchers reported that MB11 binds to the PDCoV receptor with a KD of 155 picomolar.
Yeah.
And it functionally neutralized the live surrogate virus with an IC50 of 216 picomolar.
Those numbers are incredible.
Right. But for those of us who aren't in the lab every day, can you translate picomolar affinity? Just how sticky is this mini protein compared to standard antibodies?
Sure. So a standard high-quality natural antibody produced by the human immune system might bind to its target in the nanomolar range. Yep. MB11 is operating in the picomolar range.
Okay. And a picomole is?
Picomole is 1,000th of a nanomole. So when we look at a KD, which is an equilibrium dissociation constant, of 155 picomolar, we are looking at an affinity that is orders of magnitude tighter than natural antibodies. It literally acts like molecular superglue.
Molecular superglue. I love that.
Yeah.
Wait, you mentioned KD and IC50. You explained that KD is basically how tightly it acts like superglue. But what is IC50 actually measuring in this context?
Right. So the IC50 is the half maximal inhibitory concentration. It measures the functional stopping power.
Okay.
If you have a population of cells exposed to the virus, the IC50 tells you exactly how much of your MB11 mini protein you need to add to cut the viral infection rate exactly in half.
The lower is better.
Much better. An IC50 of 216 picomolar means you need an astonishingly minuscule amount of this protein to completely crash the virus's ability to infect cells. It isn't just sticking to the virus. It is functionally incapacitating it.
That is amazing. But, you know, if you're listening to this and thinking, well, wait, if this virus mutated to jump from pigs to humans, won't it just mutate its spike protein to escape this MB11 protein? You are exactly where the researchers' heads were at.
Exactly.
We need something that covers a broad spectrum of mutations, not just the one specific strain circulating today.
Right. And the researchers knew that, so they threw distantly related Delta coronaviruses at MB11. They tested it against Sparrow-CoV and Munich-CoV just to map its breadth.
And I looked at the sequence data for Munich-CoV before we started. It shares only 59% of its spike sequence identity with PD-CoV. Just 59%.
Very low.
That is like recognizing the melody of a song, even when it is being played on a completely different instrument in a totally different time signature. The core shape of the threat is the same, and MB11 still recognizes it.
It does. It neutralized them all. In head-to-head laboratory tests against a state-of-the-art neutralizing natural antibody called PD33, the synthetic MB11 outperformed it. It outperformed it in both absolute potency and cross-strain breadth.
Wow.
It jammed the cellular entry mechanism for viruses that had diverged significantly on the evolutionary tree.
So to understand exactly how MB11 achieves this broad neutralization, the researchers used cryo-electron microscopy, or cryo-EM.
Yeah, an incredible tool.
They flash froze the viral spike physically bound to MB11 and bombarded it with electrons to capture a 2.8 angstrom resolution map of the interaction.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to see the molecular straitjacket in action, basically.
And the cryo-EM map revealed the physical mechanics of the block. MB11 perfectly wedges itself onto the exact receptor binding loops that the virus relies on to connect with the human APN receptor.
It sits right in the way.
Exactly. It physically occupies the space, creating what we call a steric clash. The viral key cannot enter the cellular lock because MB11 is welded over the key's teeth.
The structural data also provided the ultimate validation for the computational design, didn't it? When they aligned the physical structure captured by the cryo-EM microscope with the original AlphaFold 3 digital prediction, they found an incredibly tight 0.6 angstrom variance.
Yeah, that is mind-blowing.
Right. A 0.6 angstrom variance is almost unfathomable. I mean, for context, a single hydrogen atom is about 1 angstrom wide.
Yeah.
So the computer predicted this shape and how it would mechanically lock onto a complex viral spike down to the subatomic level.
It is stunning accuracy. And that brings us back to your listener's theoretical question about viral mutation. To rigorously test the virus's ability to evolve a workaround, the team employed deep mutational scanning.
Right.
They took the genetic code for the viral spike and systematically forced it to undergo every single possible amino acid mutation at the binding interface. They literally mapped tens of thousands of microscopic evolutionary moves.
So they preemptively simulated the future evolution of the virus just to see if any possible mutation could shake off the MB11 straitjacket.
Yes, and they found that MB11 imposes an exceptional high barrier to viral escape. The mechanism relies on evolutionary biology. MB11 targets what we call the conserved core of the viral spike.
Conserved core.
Right. These are the critical engine parts that the virus absolutely must maintain to interface with the human APN receptor.
Oh, I see. So the virus is trapped in a biological checkmate. If it mutates those specific amino acids to make MB11 fall off, it simultaneously destroys its own ability to grab onto the human cell.
Exactly. It can't escape the drug without breaking its own mechanism for infection.
It's brilliant. But the final major hurdle for any therapeutic is durability.
Yeah.
Right? If we are talking about stockpiling these as a global defense, they cannot be fragile.
No, they can't. And massive natural antibodies often require strict cold chain storage, and they degrade easily under stress.
So the researchers subjected MB11 to a brutal biochemical stress test. They heated it to 70 degrees Celsius, that is 158 degrees Fahrenheit, for a full hour.
Right.
And it still retained its binding affinity.
Which is fantastic. But also, because PD-CoV is an enteric virus, meaning it primarily targets the gastrointestinal tract, any effective treatment really needs to survive the human gut.
The gut is a harsh environment.
Very harsh. They soaked MB11 in highly acidic conditions, dropping the pH to 2.2 for 2 hours to simulate stomach acid. and then they exposed it to aggressive digestive enzymes like trypsin, pimetrypsin, and elastase.
The actual molecular machinery our bodies use to violently tear proteins apart for digestion.
Yeah, and MB-11 just shrugged them off. Its ultra-compact, tightly folded synthetic structure makes it incredibly resilient to heat, acid, and enzymatic degradation.
So when we pull back and look at the broader clinical and policy implications here, MB-11 sort of shatters a fundamental long-standing rule in virology.
It really does.
Because historically, there has always been a strict trade-off between potency and breadth. If an antibody is a highly potent neutralizer, it is usually hyperspecific to one viral strain.
Right.
But if an antibody is broad enough to catch multiple variants, its overall stopping power is usually significantly weaker. MB-11 achieves extreme ultrapotency while maintaining broad coverage across an entire viral genus.
And the practical applications for global health are immense. Because MB-11 is so resilient to gastrointestinal stress, it opens the door to oral or mucosal delivery systems. You know, you don't necessarily need a sterile intravenous drip in a hospital setting.
You could potentially deliver it as a lyophilized powder, just freeze-dried into a pill, or package it in lipid nanoparticles. And the manufacturing economics are completely transformed, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. Traditional monoclonal antibodies require massive, expensive bioreactors filled with mammalian cells. And those are incredibly delicate and slow to grow.
But synthetic mini-proteins can be grown in standard E. coli fermentation tanks. It is essentially the same technology we use to brew beer, but engineered to yield high-purity pharmaceuticals.
Exactly. You can scale production to millions of doses rapidly and cost-effectively. It completely circumvents the massive supply chain bottlenecks we see with traditional biologic drugs.
Of course, we do need to outline the current limitations and the necessary next steps for this technology. The study operates in vitro and in controlled surrogate models. This specific mini-binder hasn't been subjected to human clinical trials yet.
No, it hasn't. The paramount question for future studies is human immunogenicity. Because MB-11 is an entirely synthetic molecule, a shape that does not exist in nature, we have to evaluate whether the human immune system will eventually recognize it as a foreign invader and mount an immune response to clear it from the bloodstream.
Right. Though it is worth noting that previous research on similarly designed mini-proteins suggests their ultra-compact size gives them a very low immunogenic profile, they are often too small and stable to trigger a massive immune alarm.
That's the hope. And looking forward, the research team proposes several ways to increase the barrier to escape even further. They are exploring homo-oligomeric designs.
Okay, what does that mean?
This involves chemically linking multiple MB-11 units together to create a multi-pronged molecule that binds to multiple points on the virus simultaneously. It leverages avidity to lock it down even tighter.
Oh, that makes sense. They also suggest creating a therapeutic cocktail. Because MB-11 wasn't the only successful mini-binder they found, right?
Yeah.
They also isolated variants like MB-5 and MB-7 from that initial digital screen.
Right. So if you deploy a cocktail of three distinct synthetic mini-proteins, each locking down a slightly different mechanism on the conserved core, the mathematical probability of a virus mutating to escape all three simultaneously drops effectively to zero.
It's incredible. We now possess the capability to map a viral family, computationally predict its vulnerabilities, hallucinate perfectly matched inhibitors, and validate them structurally down to the atomic level. This means we have crossed a threshold where we can computationally print and stockpile cheap, resilient therapeutics for entire families of viruses before they even fully adapt to humans.
It is a complete paradigm shift.
So to distill the core insight for you today, MB-11 is an ultra-potent, computationally designed mini-protein that neutralizes a broad spectrum of Delta coronaviruses by perfectly blocking their cellular entry mechanism. Its extreme synthetic resilience to heat, acid, and digestive enzymes makes it an ideal, highly scalable candidate for proactive stockpiling against future zoonotic spillovers.
Beautifully summarized.
Thank you. But I want to leave you with a thought-provoking question. What does this mean for the future of human health? When our first line of defense against an emerging pandemic isn't a scramble for a vaccine, but a library of pre-designed proteins waiting on a shelf. And more importantly, if artificial intelligence can computationally design a perfect subatomic biological defense in a matter of weeks, how close are we to a reality where bad actors can use those exact same accessible tools to design the perfect, entirely synthetic offense? This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoy this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science bass by bass.
In the quiet lab where the bright screens glow, we fold a tiny guardian from lines we chose. A doorway in a virus, a loop in the air. We meet it with a shape that can stand right there. Not a heavy shield, just a precise embrace. A measured kind of courage in a narrow space. When the handle turns, when the danger draws near, we hold the threshold steady, we make it unclear. Stay at the door, don't let the night inside. We block the lock, we break the ride. With hands of math and patient light, we keep the entrance closed. Watch the binding tighten like a whispered vow. So close it feels like nothing can slip through now. Across strange variants, the pattern still holds. A common weakness revealed in the way it folds. Heat can rise and the air can turn acid blue. Still it keeps its grip on what it's made to do. Escape tries to sketch new routes in the dark, but the map runs out where we place the mark. Stay at the door, don't let the night inside. We block the lock, we break the ride. From fragile hopes to something built to last, we keep the entrance closed. Faster than the past.